Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. We had a little snow here on Tuesday, try to freshen up our snow cover somewhat, which was getting a little threadbare. And so winter stays with us for a while. Some people are getting awfully tired of winter, but those of us with short-term memory loss, every day we just take it one day at a time. The fish houses are off the lake, and so the lake is pretty much clear. There are a few holes out there. The people are still digging with augers, still doing a little ice fishing, but people like to get out on the lake. Some people like to get out late at night. They like to go out and drive their cars. It's just fun. Many of them have just come from the sidetrack tap. It's the sort of idea you get after a couple of bumps and a couple of beers to go out and drive in an oval and let it skid out when you're coming around the turn. It just feels good. You have to remember to take a warm blanket with you, because should your car go through the ice, you know, you'd only have about 30 seconds after you get out of the water that you would be able to walk. And so you want to have a blanket around you to keep you at least mobile. And you should have some flares. And you shouldn't put those in the trunk of your car, because that might be submerged. And so you'd want to put those on top of your head, actually, and fasten it with a belt around your chin. And you could put in a couple of energy bars there as well. So you see men fastening blankets to the tops of their heads, and just for the sheer pure fun of it, to go out driving 50, 60 miles an hour in the dark around the lake. The ice is getting thinner and thinner as we get on into March. But, you know, you can't give up on a good time somehow, especially when you've been in the sidetrack tap. Many people go out during the day to teach their children driving out on the ice, and some of those are the same people who go out late at night to drive the race course with the blanket on top of their head. They have their children drive very, very slow and to stay in the right-hand lane, even when it's hard to know where the right-hand lane is, to try to keep your children from the mistakes of the parents. This is what parenting is all about. This is what we're aiming for. But it's beautiful. You look at the ice on a dark night. You're at the wheel of your car. You do have a blanket in the back seat, a belt, a flare, a couple of energy bars. And you think the ice is lovely, dark and deep, and all the town is fast asleep. So I have another race to run, or maybe two, before I'm done. And out you go. At school, the lunch program served pizza, a kind of a sloppy sausage and onion pizza the other day, and fruit soup for some reason for dessert. And so in the period right after the lunch hour, the windows of the classroom had to be opened. There was a smell there as if something or someone had died. Children sat perfectly still. Their well-brought-up children sat perfectly still, trying not to bend to the left or the right. And yet there was something that came out of them. Some little silent but deadly ones escaped. What we referred to as girl farts. And then one of the boys remembered that old joke, the reason that God made farts smell is so deaf people can enjoy them as well. And that went around the room, and then there was some laughter and snickers. And then all the good kids tried so hard not to laugh, you know. And when you try hard, you try to hold a laugh in, it becomes more and more explosive. It can come out in the form of an explosive fart that might carry solids with you. Lovely young woman with high ideals, good scholar, sitting there at her desk, and she can let out something, sounds like a bassoon solo there. These children have studied farts because they've seen how wonderful they are in the case of grown-ups who are so terrified of farting, and how a grown-up will get this funny, alarmed look on his face, and he'll look like he's trying to pull his pants up without using his hands. And you hear a kind of a snorting sound or kind of a grumbling sound. And then he suddenly takes a couple of steps away, and there in the air that he recently vacated, there is this deadly cloud that fills the, and it just hangs there, just hangs there. He moves away as if this had nothing to do with him. He looks up at the ceiling as if he's inspecting it for structural problems. And meanwhile, this deadly gas is spreading. The dog barks. He thinks there's a skunk around somewhere, and the cat vomits some hairballs. The goldfish float to the top of the tank. They're all dead, and smoke alarm goes off. And Dad just stands there as if he doesn't know anything about this. And you wonder what in the world a person would have to eat to produce that sort of smell. Some kind of fried silage or a boiled owl, perhaps. It's all fascinating to a child, so they become students of flatulence, and they study the 10 different varieties of farts, the silent but deadly, and the slow leaks, and the hissers, the fizzers, the poppers, the whizzers, the croakers, the bangers, the cheek flappers, the tail gunners, and the cargo farts, which are the ones that deliver a load. And this lovely young woman who is a role model for other young women in our school sits there sort of clamping on to that particular fart, which is growing inside of her. And the teacher who believes that she is trying to raise children to confront the problems of America, not to be obsessed with flatulence, asks her to come to the board and write the Emily Dickinson poem on the board, "Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me." And she stands up and she walks kind of stiffly up to the front of the room. She's kind of clamping her cheeks together. She's very elegant, but you know, chemistry works the same inside elegant people as it works inside anybody else. And she feels this enormous bubble in her midsection, as if there's a pregnancy that's begun. All around the room, there's all of this suppressed laughter and people trying to put a cork in it. And she knows that she should be a model for others. She's a young Christian woman, and she should not fall victim to all this juvenile silliness. And then she thinks about the Bible in order to suppress this. And she thinks about the apostles of Jesus and how they gathered together after the crucifixion. And she remembers that verse in the second chapter of Acts, where it says, "And when the day of Pentecost had come, they were all together in one place, and suddenly there came a noise like the violent rushing wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting." And she explodes, and it comes out her nose. There are two long strings of mucus that hang there like spider webs. And she is so humiliated, tears come to her eyes, and she turns away from the class just as the young man sitting in the front seat brings out the forbidden cigarette lighter you are not allowed to have. And she bends over in her horror, and out comes this long trombone note, and then a blast of flame. Well, we all survive jokes. We all survive jokes. The teacher tries to comfort her, and then when the teacher turns back to the board where the Emily Dickinson poem is, it has been rewritten by a young man who came up with chalk. "Because I could not wait for farts, they kindly wait for me. The horses fart and toss their heads towards infinity." We all become jokes, inevitably. Ole and Lena had a cow, and Sven came over to see the cow. It was a brand new cow, and the odd thing about it was, Ole said, that when you milked the cow, it let a fart. Well, Sven said, let me try that. So he sat down on the stool and he pulled on the cow's udder and it came out with this enormous fart. Sven said, is the cow from North Dakota? Why do you ask? Said Ole, because my wife does the same thing. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.